the brown shirts that Hitler organized, that destroyed Europe, that caused World War II. This was a little group of about 10 guys in the beginning, 12 guys, exactly, who burned down the Reichstag. What about Jesus Christ? You know about Jesus Christ and the 12 apostles. Those 13 people had a mission and a message, and today there are 2 billion members of the Catholic Church that came from those 13 people. Don't tell me that a tiny little group of people cannot ruin the world or destroy the world.
Radical feminism. Okay, let's wrap our heads around this. Where Sandra Fluke, I think that's her last name, Fluke, could testify to Congress demanding that I, as a taxpayer, pay that little twit's birth control pills, that I as a taxpayer have to support her lifestyle of promiscuity. Give me a flippin' break. How the heck did we get here? Let me tell you, it came from this chant right here. And this is how it goes. So the leader would say, "Why are we here today?" she asked. "To make a revolution," they answered. "What kind of a revolution?" she replied. "The cultural revolution," they chanted. "And how do we make a cultural revolution?" she demanded. "By destroying the American family," they answered. This is Terry Beatley, your host of What If We've Been Wrong? I'm shining light into some dark places so that beauty, goodness, and truth defeat the schemes of the enemy. It's true, people are perishing for lack of knowledge, and we're instructed to have nothing to do with the evil deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. That's what I do on What If We've Been Wrong? Rethink, explore, and uncover some hidden truths so that more people can experience an abundant life and the joy of being set free from the shackles that hold us in prison. Welcome to What If We've Been Wrong? You've tuned in today to one of my favorite interviews of all time, Mallory Millett. She wrote an article called Marxist Feminism's Ruined Lives. Let me tell you who Mallory is, but first let me tell you her journey. It began back in the 60s, and she wrote this, "And so began my period as an unwitting witness to history. I stayed with Kate," who was her sister, "and her lovable Japanese husband in a dilapidated loft as she finished her book, a PhD thesis for Columbia University called Sexual Politics. It was 1969. Kate invited me to join her for a gathering at the home of her friend Lila Karp. They called the assemblage a consciousness-raising group, a typical communist exercise, something practiced in China. We gathered at a large table as the chairperson opened the meeting with a back-and-forth recitation, like a litany, a type of prayer done in Catholic Church. But now it was Marxism, the Church of the Left, mimicking religious practice. "Why are we here today?" she asked. "To make revolution," they answered. "What kind of revolution?" she replied. "The cultural revolution," the women chanted. "And how do we make a cultural revolution?" she demanded. "By destroying the American family," they answered. "And how do we destroy the family?" she came back. "By destroying the American patriarch," they cried exuberantly. "And how do we destroy the American patriarch?" she replied. "By taking away his power." "And how do we do that?" "By destroying monogamy," they shouted. "And how can we destroy monogamy?" Well, their answer left me dumbstruck, breathless, disbelieving my ears. Was I on planet Earth? Who were these people? "By promoting promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, and homosexuality," they resounded. Well, my guest today is Mallory Millett. She was an unwitting spectator with this witness to history as her sister, Kate Millett, formed the National Organization of Women, a communist organization. Mallory, welcome to What If We've Been Wrong? Shining light in dark places. Glad to have you on today.
Thank you so much. I'm very glad to have come in contact with you, Terry, and to have this opportunity.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm 54 years old. I'm not sure how old you are, but all I know is American millennial women, every woman in America, and for sure the millennial women who make up 40%, millennials make up 40% of our electorate, they must know the backstory of how your sister started with this rotten seed of an idea and spread communism all over our country, trying to take our country down. Whew, so where do we begin in this? Give us some of the backstory, Mallory, of what happened, how you end up, you graduated from high school. Wasn't it a Catholic high school? And what did the nuns warn you about?
Well, the nuns were very shocked when they heard that I was planning to go to the state university. I had been in Catholic convent schools from the time I started kindergarten to when I graduated from high school. So that was 13 years of Catholic schools. And with the nuns and the priests, and they all wore habits then. It was the real Catholic convent school atmosphere. And when they heard that I was going to go to the University of Minnesota, they were very shocked and upset. And I went to my favorite nun, and I said, what's the matter? Why? What's going on here? And she said, well, my dear, if you go to the University of Minnesota and you spend 4 years there, you're going to come out a communist and an atheist. And I said, oh, my God, that's so crazy. You know, my friends and I just laughed that off. We thought these nuns were so nuts, you know. And the fact of the matter is that I went there and I came out 4 years later a communist and an atheist.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I don't want to get too far ahead because you know as well as I know that communism, socialism is not being taught in a negative light in the government-run school system anymore. Like, I know my father, who's now deceased, but he taught me that back in the 40s and 50s, the kids learned what is communism, what is socialism, what is Marxism, not anymore. So how did you get deceived into Marxism and becoming a communist?
Well, because they never used those terms at all. Everything was about, you know, there's a thing now in American education that's just run so rampant where it's about changing the world. The minute the kids get into school, they start in kindergarten with this business about you can change the world, you can change the world. And then they proceed to teach. They taught me Rousseau, Engels, you know, we read all of these people in an academic atmosphere, as if these were important writers, you know, when Rousseau was terribly important. Well, Rousseau was one of the seeds of the entire communist movement. They pushed him like mad. All these various philosophers and teachers who came out of the Frankfurt School, John Dewey, there were a lot of people, you know, John Dewey, who created the Dewey Decimal System. You know, who thinks he's malevolent, you know? Whoever thinks that about John Dewey,
exactly.
he did the Dewey Decimal System. Dr. Spock wrote the book on baby and child care. Everybody thinks he's a perfectly innocuous person, just a regular everyday doctor or guy. No, he was an activist communist.
Okay, but we're getting ahead of ourselves, though. You know why? Because we have to make the assumption that our listeners might not know what is communism, what is socialism. So let's actually take just a couple steps back. What is it?
Well, it's a body of thinking that is based upon a deep sympathy for the worker, supposedly. This is all the trap that they lay for you to get enmeshed in. They really have nothing to do with the worker. Everything about communism is a farce. Everything about it is fake. Everything about it. In fact, the man who started it, Karl Marx, made his focal point the worker, the terrible abuses of the worker that the landowner and the factory owner, visited upon the poor workers. Well, the fact of the matter is that Karl Marx himself never worked a day in his life. he sucked money to live on out of his friend Friedrich Engels' family. Engels came from a very wealthy family, manufacturing family, and Engels and his friend Karl Marx lived off of Engels' family for many, many years until they got very fed up. But he believed that, you know, he believed in the whole socialist ideal, which is where everybody, the motto of it is, from each according to his ability to each according to his need. That's the basis of communism. Everybody puts all their work and labor and everything that they pour their life into a big pot, and then everybody draws out of their pot whatever they need personally to exist. So have you ever heard of anything more insane than that? From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. I look at that, and I, as a feeble, weak human being who is basically lazy and I don't really want to work that hard. I mean, we're all kind of like this. We want things to be easy. So I look at that and I go, well, I don't have a lot of ability. You know, I can't do much at all. But by the way, here, I've got my list of needs. And the list of needs, you can unfold, and there's about 5,000 things on it. You know, I need everything. And these people think that they should be getting their food, their electricity, all of their needs, and everything free from the state.
So
everything
basically
can just be provided.
Right. So you're talking about the redistribution of wealth.
Yes, which, by the way, Terry, do you recall your wealth, whatever it is, no matter how spare or rich it is, do you recall your wealth, quote-unquote, being distributed to you? Was it ever originally distributed? No, it was earned.
Absolutely.
Everybody earns the money that they get. They earn it. There's no such thing as distributing wealth.
Okay,
that's just nonsense.
Okay, so you graduate from college. Were you a full blown communist, or were you just kind of naive to the idea? And then it wasn't until you got back from Asia.
I was pretty naive about what I had been turned into.
Okay.
I didn't really think of myself as a communist. I was just very far left. And the people on the left don't think that that has any, you know, everything has been parsed and broken up and made into different things, when in reality it's all one thing. This socialist thing, people say, oh, well, I'm not a communist, I'm a socialist. Well, Marx himself called socialism the thin end of the wedge. He said, quote unquote, if I make them a socialist, I've got them as communists.
Absolutely.
And that's the technique. The technique is to get you to be absorbed with the poor of the world, the poverty-stricken people of Africa, of Somalia, of all these various places. And then you're supposed to get deeply personally upset about all this and then be willing to put everything you own and everything you have into this big pot and not keep your own earnings and not just take care of yourself. In America, we have a basic philosophy of taking personal care of oneself, personal responsibility. That's what's important. Just take care of yourself. Make a good... I say to young people when they tell me they want to change the world, I always laugh and say, just forget about the world and just take hold of yourself.
Right.
Let's think about changing yourself,
perfect.
Okay?
Perfect.
And
right.
I think you will discover that if you change yourself, the world will somehow magically seem to have changed.
Exactly. Now, before we get too far into the roots of communism, let's swing back around to this whole idea of sexual politics. This is where the National Organization of Women, with Betty Friedan and your sister Kate Millett, took hold. But I want to tell you, and our listeners, just a quick story, is when I was 19 years old, I came home from college. I was at a secular college, and I told my father, who's very well-read about communism and all that back history, and I said, Dad, I see there's an organization on campus, and I'm thinking about joining it. It's called the National Organization of Women. What do you think? And Mallory, you know what my dad said?
What?
He said, sit down. And he said, I'm going to teach you more about communism. He said, I thought I'd taught you enough before I let you go to the secular university, but clearly I did not. And he said, sit down. And he said, you are not to join that organization, and let me tell you why. So you pick it up from here on sexual politics. Why did your sister and Betty Friedan, why did they go after sexual politics? Because this had nothing to do with the equal rights movement, the first wave of feminism, which I like to present the argument. There are only two waves of feminism, the original one and the one we're doing right now on this phone. Because your sister and Betty Friedan, that they attacked that original wave of feminism because it had nothing to do with sexual politics. It just had to do with voting, suffrage, abolition. Pick it up from here as far as why sexual politics.
Well, first you have to understand that from the moment I was born, I shared a bedroom with my sister, Kate. She was 6 years older than I. And so when I was brought home from being born, I was put into a crib in her room, and we shared that room for close to 15 years, 16 years, something like that. And all I heard about was changing the world, getting rich and famous. But underneath it all the time was this hatred for boys, this thing about boys and this fury that she had about being born a girl instead of a boy. And I used to have to sit and listen to these harangues all night long. She slept in the upper bunk, I slept in the lower bunk. And I would, long into the night, be lying in bed listening to her raging and ranting and carrying on about boys and how terrible they were and how awful they were and how we girls had to fight for our rights and we had to fight the men. And, you know, so it was a perfect thing for her. She was, upset about this situation between boys and girls from a very early age.
Okay, what more specifically was she upset at? Did she have a bad boyfriend relationship or something? I mean, or who was feeding this? Was she getting these ideas from somebody?
Well, it's like this. I was at a New Year's party, or a Christmas party, a couple of days ago where there were a bunch of communists just now here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And some little girl came up to me. She was a little tiny a woman, maybe 5 feet tall, very, very thin, and all in camouflage clothing, and her hair cut very short like a guy. Mm-hmm. And she came up and said, "I just heard you're Kate Millett's sister. Oh, my God, she's my goddess. She's my goddess." She was just carrying on and on about Kate Millett, how wonderful she was. And so I don't like to betray my contempt for all of this so openly when I'm at a party or something. I don't want to get into a political harangue with somebody because I've been having to deal with these people around me all my life. So I know how to just, sort of step tiptoe through the tulips and not get slugged or something, right. Because they're very violent. They're very crazy, especially right now these days. And I said to her, I just want to tell you one thing. My sister really hated men. I think you need to know that she wasn't like a normal gal who was just living in the world, but she was a woman who suffered from extreme hatred for men. "Oh, I can't believe that. I can't believe that," this girl kept saying. And then she started talking about, since I was a little girl, it's always bothered me. I mean, why do women wear high heels and men wear flats? And men wear pants and women wear skirts. Why is that? Really think about it. The high heels are so they can't run, right? So they can't run from the men. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this girl. What happens, Terry, is that they skew everything in life off into some crazy idea that has nothing to do with why men wear trousers and women wear skirts and, all of this business. And what my sister taught in her book, Sexual Politics, is that every single thing that has to do with the difference between the sexes and every single thing that goes on between men and women is acculturated, and it is created by society in order to keep women down. The whole purpose of it is to keep women down. And they use things like the binding of feet of the women in China as examples of that, and our high heels are the same thing. I mean, there is this logic, this crazy Marxist logic that wends through every aspect of life that proves once again, that men are the oppressor and women are the dominated and the oppressed. And that women never had any choice in anything. They never had any chance to develop themselves or become big and powerful like men, because women should run the world too. And if women ran the world, here's the catcher, Terry. If women ran the world, there would be no more war.
So that's what they promoted. Okay.
Oh, this is what they believe with their heart and soul, that if women ran the world, there would be no more war, which is nonsense, you know.
All right, so with that thought, we're going to hang on to that thought, Mallory. Let's see, when we come back after this break, we're going to be digging deeper into why they were promoting promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, homosexuality, this just... It was just
and the one thing I left out of that list, which I've put in further descriptions of this thing, is abortion.
Absolutely.
Promiscuity, eroticism, homosexuality. Abortion is in there, in that list.
And because I made that promise to Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who founded NARAL Pro-Choice America, who partnered with Betty Friedan, who was one of the co-founders of the National Organization of Women. We're going to be
and Kate Millett. My sister Kate was very involved with Nathanson.
Absolutely. And right when we come back, we're going to be digging deeper into this, how the sexual politics commandeered the equal rights movement.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, you're back with Terry Beatley on What If We've Been Wrong? And I'm interviewing today Mallory Millett. She's been a longstanding director of the David Horowitz Freedom Center, as well as a board of director on the Center for Security Policy. She wrote an article a couple years back about how her sister Kate Millett formed the National Organization of Women back in the late 60s, and how that is a communist organization. It's rooted in Marxism, and it's caused the tsunami of death and destruction across the United States of America. And we are here to set the record straight. Mallory, thanks for coming back on. And what I want to jump into is this issue of sexual politics. What I do know from reading the book Subverted, we do know that Betty Friedan, and I suppose Kate as well, in the beginning, they were not for abortion being in the planks of their platform of the National Organization of Women. But after one of the founders of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, really worked on Betty Friedan for about a year and convinced her to ramrod abortion into the platform of the National Organization of Women, that's when sexual politics literally, you know, commandeered the equal rights movement. So walk us through the beginning part of this whole, the abortion plank and sexual politics and where Kate fit in with this.
Well, Kate was always for abortion. Kate, from the first times I ever heard her speak of things like this, and you have to always remember, we shared a bedroom until she was 17 years old. We shared a bedroom. And so I knew everything about my sister. We were very, very close, and she was very forthright with everything she thought and believed in. And of course, she believed in abortion. She was very much for pushing homosexuality. She was already in that place. So I'm sure she didn't have to be won over to the abortion part of the plank.
Okay. Let me interject was she homosexual herself?
Well, no. You know, this is the... My sister Kate was the most boy-crazy girl I ever knew in my life growing up. But the boys didn't take to her quite the way she felt about them. She was not a very attractive personality because she had such a dark aura. She was so angry. She was she was pathologically sulky and miserable. She was just that way all the time. And so she was expelled a couple of times from every school she went to. She was just a pretty antisocial kind of individual. So she was looking for a way to act out her hatred for others, for herself, and for the world any way she could. And this was a very convenient place to go. You know, it worked out just great. Now, when she was in college, she fell in love with a boy who then went off to the Korean War. And when he came back, he wasn't the same. They were nearly engaged when he left. And when he came back, he wasn't really the same and totally broke her heart. Mm-hmm. Really, really broke her heart. So within not very long period of time, she ended up getting seduced by a woman psychology professor of hers at the University of Minnesota. So the University of Minnesota not only turned her into a Marxist and an atheist, but one of her professors, by the way, a married woman professor, seduced her into thinking she could be lesbian. So she went on a big toot and had a big affair with this woman for a couple of years and appalled our family. I have whole family members who've never spoken to Kate again since she did this, and she decided she was a lesbian, which she really, you know, she went back to men later. She ended up marrying a Japanese sculptor, a beautiful, wonderful man named Fumio Yoshimura, and she was married to him for 17 years. And they were extremely happy together. But it was right at that time, also right in the middle of that marriage, that the National Organization for Women thing began to coalesce, and she got deeply involved with all of these people. So she was writing her Columbia dissertation, her PhD dissertation, at home, and I was living with her at the time. I was staying with her in her loft on the Bowery in New York City because I had just relocated from living in Asia for many years, and I had nobody else to run to or any, no place else to cling to someone but my sister in St. Paul, Minnesota. I mean, my sister in New York, and she had to, you know, sort of help acclimate me back to being in the United States again because I had been gone for 4 whole years, and I was a little bit culture shocked when I came home. So I was living in her loft with her when she was finishing this dissertation, and I, as a matter of fact, thought up the title. We spent long periods of time trying to think up the title, and one day I just said to her, well, look, this is all about the politics of sex, really, isn't it? I was still her acolyte. I still believed in what she I thought I believed in what she believed in. Mm-hmm. It was just that I was looking for a home. I was looking for security. But I said, why don't you call it Sexual Politics? So that's what she called the book, and when she published the book in 1970, Time magazine put her on their cover, and they called her, get this, they called her the Mao Zedong of the women's movement. And that couldn't have been more perfect, because my sister was a white female version of Mao Zedong.
Okay, she was dictatorial. A lot of our listeners, they may not know who that was, so explain who Mao was.
Oh, my goodness. Mao Zedong is the man who took over China after World War I and turned it into a communist country. China became a communist country because of Mao Zedong and his movement, which swept across China. It was pure communism. They murdered millions and millions of hapless Chinese people. They had these pogroms. It was very much like if people have heard of Pol Pot and what he did in Cambodia, where you throw all of the urbanized people, the city people, out into the fields and make them become workers. Everybody had to go out and produce rice. And it was a bloody, hateful, tyrannical system where the people were only allowed to have one baby. Every couple could only have one child. Well, the Chinese, being people who preferred boy children, see, this was another thing my sister hated, is that every time a boy was born, people would celebrate much more than if it was a girl. Oh, a boy, that was so much more wonderful than a girl, you know. Well, and there were these attitudes. There were attitudes like this in society. So there was a little bit of a, you know, there were places she could get a foothold, you know, and turn people over to her way of thinking. But anyway, Mao, the way that they dealt with this was, if the one baby who was born was a girl, they killed it immediately. The man and woman would just, you know, the baby would be born in their little hut on the rice paddy, and they would just kill the baby, suffocate it immediately, because they all wanted to have a boy. If you were going to have only one child, you wanted it to be a son. So this wholesale murder of babies all over China was going on like mad. And I remember being in Catholic parochial school and having the nuns tell us about the way that you could tell the difference between a barbarous culture and civilization. What's the difference between barbarism and civilization? Well, here, look at China. They murder all the babies. That's called abortion. That's barbarism. But in America, we're never allowed to kill a baby. I mean, babies are sacred, and the human life and the individual is sacred.
Until the National Organization of Women shred the right to life away. Let me ask you this. How could 12 American women, young women, how could they sit around a table up in New York, dream up such an audacious idea of this radical feminism, which I believe that's an insult to the real definition of feminism. So I retract what I just said. What they're doing is actually attacking feminism. But let me, how did they sat around, they got these ideas on how they were going to promote eroticism, promiscuity, abortion, prostitution, homosexuality. Back in the late 1960s, they've won. I mean, their victory is not going to be long.
Oh, they've taken over. They have taken. Well, now you have to remember that at the same time of all of this, in between World War I and World War II, all of the activities that were going on in Europe and all over in Germany, these ideas were being formed and forged into bigger ideas, and there were things called the Frankfurt School coming out of Germany. There were various people that came out of Europe and that came into our colleges and universities and changed the direction of all of our learning. They very quietly, the Soviets, and the Reds, the Chinese, very quietly invaded and interspersed themselves throughout all of our colleges and universities. And this was a plotted thing. They weren't going to be able to beat us in war. They weren't going to be able to beat us in all these other ways through commerce or anything else. But they would beat us by changing our whole psychology. And so they began to infiltrate all of our colleges and universities and all of our media. The women around that table, when they met, they said, you know, the thing that they needed to do in order to create this revolution, the mantra that you read earlier in this interview about how do we make the revolution and their purpose was to destroy the American family. Think about that.
And that's what they've done.
Their purpose was to destroy the what insane person would want to destroy the number one most important little atom of civilization, which is the grouping together of families, families to make a community. The family is the atomic basis.
Mallory, let me ask you this. Did
society.
You grow up in a stable home? Did you have a mom and a dad?
I had a very stable home until I was 7 and Kate was 13. My father left the home then. And that is what finally really inflamed Kate.
Yeah.
Was when Dad left, because she had a huge, huge crush on him. She was very much in love with our father.
So she was broken really by your dad and then took it out on the rest of society.
Yeah. But she was already mad at boys when she was very, very young. So, because she wanted to go out and play baseball with the boys, and she wanted to, you know, all of this, because she was a tomboy. But she was not a lesbian. She had a perfectly great marriage to this man for 17 years until she destroyed it with all of this propaganda. She, you know, after they published her picture on the cover of Time magazine, and called her the leader of the women's movement, word got out that she had had these lesbian adventures in college when this professor had seduced her. And so they lured her, this group called the Daughters of Bilitis, which is a lesbian group in New York City. They lured her to a meeting at Judson Church in New York City one evening, and she got to the meeting. It was this whole organization of lesbians. And when she arrived there, they had gotten Time magazine reporters to be embedded in the meeting. And then they got up and they accused her of being a lesbian and of leaving all the lesbians behind in her big movement. Oh, you're such a big shot. They put you on the cover of Time, and now you're denying your lesbian roots, and you're leaving us all in the dirt. And the lesbians are the lowest women on the totem pole, and look what you've done to us. You need to get out and announce to the world that you're a lesbian. And then that way you can bring us along with you in this movement. Well, my sister was shamed by all of this.
Wow.
And these Time magazine people were in the room when it happened. So the next issue of Time denounced Kate Millett as, oh, we're sorry about this cover article. We didn't realize she wasn't a real woman. because she's a lesbian. She has announced that she is a lesbian, and therefore she can no longer speak for American women. So this was just an enormous blow to her. She had been made into this idol on the cover of Time magazine, and within weeks she was crashed down and kicked to the gutter, you know.
How did that affect her going forward?
Oh, she was just furious and filled with resentment. And then she wanted to really throw herself in with the lesbians because they were the lesser group now, and she's always had a messianic thing. I think she thought she was Jesus Christ. You know how some kids get the Catholic thing all wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they get it all wrong. And whatever you do for the least of these, my brethren, she held very deeply in her heart. And she thought she cared about others much more than other people. Most of these people have this delusion that they care more. You know, I care more than you do, Terry. Mm-hmm. I care more than you do. I'm a better person than you are. That's why I'm a communist. Because mm-hmm. I think about the poor guy, the little guy. But the thing you notice about these people is that they're really nasty people. They're never nice to their friends and family. Mm-hmm. You know, they may care about some stranger way out there in Africa that they've never met and that they're starving, but they treat everybody around them like dirt.
Mm-hmm.
They're disloyal friends. They lie. There's a tremendous culture of lying on the left. It doesn't matter what lie you tell as long as it's for the movement.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for the movement, you can lie, you can kill, you can cheat, you know. It's a disgrace. What they turn these young people into, you know, these people, these Antifa people who are up at Berkeley now keeping people from speaking and all of that, they think they're very virtuous people. Meanwhile, they're putting on black masks and picking up tire irons and attacking strangers, beating them on the head.
Mm-hmm.
These are good people?
Well,
you know.
What I was going to say is one of the first attacks on original feminism, you know, the suffrage movement and abolition and all this, came from Margaret Sanger, you know, the founder of American Birth Control League, which
yes.
ultimately changed its name to Planned Parenthood Federation. Margaret Sanger urged women back in the early 1900s to be a rebel, to have that good
yes.
hell look in your eyes. And so she had her 100-year, you know, her century march, which happened in 26, after the day after Donald Trump was inaugurated. All those
yeah.
women came to D.C. with their nasty little attitudes and their pink hats.
And their little hats.
Oh, yeah. But this all fits the outlaw, the rebel, being defiant. This is what Marxism does. And when you really understand the history of Planned Parenthood and its founder, what you discover is that, well, wait a minute. She was an atheist. She hated the church.
Yes.
She most particularly hated the Catholic Church. And
yes.
And she, when she went over to England, she hung out with the anarchists, she hung out with the communists, with the socialists,
yes.
and this all feeds into, well, it goes back to division. Talk to us about this whole idea of Marxism, which is conquer and divide and conquer.
Take over the world. Their purpose is to take over the world.
Take over the world, but they do it by dividing. So they'll pit us black against white. They'll pit
yes.
us men against women. Now
yes.
they're going to be pitting probably the old against the young. How
yep.
how else is this done? You know, if you're
yeah.
straight versus homosexual, everything
yeah.
is division, but yet we're supposed to be the United States of America, right?
Yes. And we really were that most of the time. I mean, we had our civil war and all of that. But, I mean, the thing is that when these women were sitting around this table in 1969 and they were plotting this National Organization for Women movement and they wanted to destroy the American family, they wanted to drag down the patriarchy, to take away the power of men completely, and they would always conclude by the end of the meeting that the only way of doing all of this was to infiltrate every institution in America. So they sat there and they drafted a plan. These 14 women or 12 women, I'm not quite sure how many there were there, but it was around that many, around 12, 13, 14 women. They were going to, in all of their separate practices, all of their separate talents, and things that they did, whether they were teachers or doctors or owned their own companies or whatever it was they did, their plan was to go out into the world and infiltrate every institution. So their marching orders were to infiltrate the judiciary, the executive branch of government, the schools, the PTAs, I love the library system. the library system they were going to infiltrate, which they did. Public offices, like, you know, the mayors of towns, the city councils of various towns, everywhere. Their mandate was to go out and infiltrate all of the media, all of the networks, and to become lawyers and journalists and do all of these things, and to encourage all the women who joined National Organization for Women to get out there and start to infiltrate, to move this doctrine through American society. And by God, they did such a bang-up job of this, Terry.
They did.
By gosh, they did this. They did the whole thing. I'll tell you.
Hold that thought right there. We're going to be coming back with Mallory Millett in just a couple minutes. I want every American female millennial. You're making up about 20% of the next presidential election, the electorate vote. We need you to know the back history of the National Organization of Women, the real history, the Marxist communist roots, and what it really is.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Back with Terry Beatley and Mallory Millett, and we're talking about the original roots of the National Organization of Women and this second wave of radical feminism and its destructive, this destructive tsunami that's washed over America. It's been the tsunami of secular humanism trying to take God out of America. But as women, we are standing on truth. And the reason I'm interviewing Mallory Millett is she's sister to Kate Millett, the founder, one of the founders of the National Organization of Women. Mallory, I want to pick this up with this idea of changing the world. You know, from kindergarten to academia at the college level, why is this so pushed to our young, and why is it such a lie?
Yeah, this is the seed, and you know, it seems like the most innocuous thing in the world. If you sat down with a couple of parents who have a child in kindergarten and another child in sixth grade and another one going to college or something, and you said to them, you know, you've got to stop your children from getting into this changing the world thing, they think, well, that's crazy. We all want to change the world. No, this is a propaganda that started in our schools quite a while ago. That's started by these people that come from the Frankfurt School, from the Engels, Marx order of thinking, you know. First of all, how crazy is that to tell a little 6- and 7-year-old that they can change the world? First of all, they're 6 or 7 years old. They know nothing. The very idea that they should be changing the world is preposterous. I think it's been concocted in order to give people a sense of personal strength or personal courage or personal worth. But what it leads to is so deadly. Who are you one person who are in school now, don't barely know your multiplication tables. Who are you to change the world? The world has been here for millions of years. There's been trial and error going on through great long eras of history. Who are you to come out and change the world? Are you serious? This is insane. Change yourself. Make yourself whole. Make yourself healed. Make yourself solid. And forget about the rest of the world. Stop being such a busybody about what other people are doing and trying to project your virtue onto everyone. I have a fur coat, and I wear this fur coat someplace, and people walk up to me and say, aren't you afraid somebody's going to throw paint on your coat? You know, this nonsense that we have of bullying each other. Everybody's bullying everybody else so that I can prove that I'm a more virtuous person than you are. I would never wear fur. You're a terrible, dangerous person because you wear fur. These things go on. And on and on and on. It's gotten to the point where there's all of these GMO foods, all of these things that aren't even real. Most of these things are preposterous ideas that don't have any basis in truth. But, you know, before Mao Zedong took over China, there was a thinker called Confucius who was a brilliant Chinese philosopher. And before communism was ever even a word used in China, when it was just plain old China, this is what Confucius said. To put the world right in order, we must first put the nation in order. To put the nation in order, we must first put the family in order. To put the family in order, we must first cultivate our personal life. We must first set our own hearts right. Now, this was Confucius, zillions of years ago, who knew full well how dangerous the idea of changing the world is for a singular individual. You know, it's much more important to make yourself into the person you want to be and to make yourself into the person that God gave you the propensity for being. That's your job in life, not changing the world.
So let me go back. I'm looking at this chant again. And for those listeners who just tuned in, I'm actually going to read this again because this is something that happened and it changed the world forever, because I mean, a lot of the damage that your sister did,
yeah.
I mean, people cannot recover from this. If you kill
and I'm
a baby,
so glad you're, I'm so glad you're going to read it again, because you read it before and now we've talked a bit, and now yeah. it's people need to be reminded of the craziness of what these women were saying and doing. You know, one of them was the niece of the Secretary of War under Franklin Delano Roosevelt. These were very serious, upper-class, deeply educated women who were turning on everything they had been taught and turning on their own loyalty to their own country. This is something I heard many times now, because I went to a lot of meetings, and every meeting of theirs was opened with this chant.
It was open with it. Okay, so let me read this again. So here's Mallory. How old were you again when you first attended this meeting?
I was 1969. Oh, God, I hate to tell you, because then everybody knows how old I am now.
I'm proud of that age. But anyway, in your early 20s, at least, right?
I was in my late 20s.
Late 20s, okay. So it's 1969. Kate, so this is Mallory's sister, invited her to join her for a gathering at the home of her friend Lila Karp. And it was there that these women, these well-educated women, you know, who had already embraced communism, so they sat around and they'd open up the meeting. And so I assume now this is your sister leading the chant.
No, there would be a different chairwoman. They call it chairperson.
Chairperson.
For each meeting, they would make a different one of them.
Okay.
The one who ran
so
the
for those of you listening today, and you have always wondered, why does the world look the way it looks today with this crazy, radical feminism? Okay, let's wrap our heads around this. Where Sandra Fluke, I think that's her last name, Fluke, could testify to Congress demanding that I, as a taxpayer, pay that little twit's birth control pills that I as a taxpayer have to support her lifestyle of promiscuity. Give me a flippin' break. How the heck did we get here? Let me tell you, it came from this chant right here. And this is how it goes. So the leader would say, why are we here today? She asks. To make a revolution, they answered. What kind of a revolution? She replied. The cultural revolution, they chanted. And how do we make a cultural revolution? She demanded. by destroying the American family, they answered. How do we destroy the family, she came back. By destroying the American patriarch, they cried exuberantly. And how do we destroy the American patriarch, she replied. By taking away his power. And how do we do that? By destroying monogamy, they shouted. And how can we destroy monogamy? She asked. Their answer left me dumbstruck, breathless, disbelieving my ears. Was I on planet Earth? Who were these people? Because they shouted, by promoting promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, and homosexuality, and then you clarified this, and abortion as well, they resounded. Folks, the culture today in America, which we're now spewing all over the world, the reason it looks today is not because it's always looked that way. It's because a small team of women back in the late 60s who were God-hating Marxists, feminists, communists, basically launched out on a plan. And I've got Mallory Millett here on the phone with me, and she's sister to Kate Millett, who was one of the principal leaders.
Let me add to that, chant. I published this Marxist Feminism Ruined Lives on Front Page Magazine in September of 2014. And, they have all these comments come in. And this article had hundreds and hundreds of comments. It went viral. There were just thousands and thousands of likes and comments and everything. And one man wrote in, and he said, you make these 13 women sitting at this table so important. What on earth makes you think that some tiny little group of people ended up, ruining the world? That that all of this happened just at their hands. You. This is preposterous. No little group of 13 people can have that big an effect on society. And I normally didn't respond to people's comments, but I did respond to this man, and I said, "So let me get this straight. You've never heard of the brown shirts that Hitler organized destroyed Europe, that caused World War II? This was a little group of about 10 guys in the beginning, 12 guys, exactly, who burned down the Reichstag. Mm-hmm. What about Jesus Christ? You know about Jesus Christ and the 12 apostles. Those 13 people had a mission and a message, and today there are 2 billion members of the Catholic Church that came from those 13 people. Don't tell me that a tiny little group of people cannot ruin the world or destroy the world. When Lenin and his crowd, when they started the Russian Revolution in 1917, it was just a little handful of these guys who started this thing, and it just swept all across Russia.
Right, and how many people died because of communism?
Oh, hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of people have died through the treachery and the cruelty and the mercilessness of communism.
And anybody out there saying, oh, well, Christianity, that's caused a lot of people to die too. Let's get those numbers right.
They talk about the Inquisition. First of all, it was hundreds of years ago in another land in Spain. It had nothing to do with America. And they really only never even killed that many people in the Inquisition. If you sit down and study the actual history of it, you're shocked at how few people were actually executed. This is just pure nonsense. Every single group at one time or another has gone a little crazy and done stuff like that. It's nothing like the horrors of the communist revolution that's spreading all across the world. It's devouring the world.
It is devouring the world. Yep.
It is. It's devouring the world. And this kind of thinking that is based in communism, they've got all these innocuous kinds of ideas that they say, well, like redistribution of wealth. That sounds really nice. I don't know about you, but my wealth was never distributed to me by anybody. I had to earn every penny I've ever gotten, and so has my husband. This is preposterous, and that I'm supposed to work 20 hours a day, work my head off, and make a little bit of a living for myself so that I should, they would, the left, the communists would tax us 90%. so that you can work and slave and toil your days away and have 90% of your earnings taken away from you and distributed to people lying around in motels looking at pornography, taking opioids, shooting heroin, smoking pot all day, and refusing to work for a living.
And it's equal misery.
These are the people that...
spread equal misery.
Misery,
yeah.
Yes.
Let's see.
That's what Winston Churchill said. It's the spreading of equal misery.
You know, at the beginning of your article, you put a Mae West quote, and which reads like this: when women go wrong, men go right after them. Mae West.
Yeah. Right. And of course, she meant that in a wry way. She meant it as kind of a double entendre. You know, if a woman becomes a prostitute, then she becomes a magnet for men and all of that. But he also meant, and I meant by using it as a tagline for this Marxist Feminism Ruined Lives article, was that when women go wrong, men go right after them. And that's the fact. That's why it's the women we have to get. Yep. Because the minute you get the women, you've got the men. Because the women do run society. Men run the world. My dream is for things to go back into balance, where men run the world and women run society. Because when the women stayed in their homes...
Oh my gosh, we are turning radical feminism on its head. Friends, the bad news is we're out of time. The good news is I still have another 15 minutes of riveting conversation with Mallory Millett. So I tell you what, I'm going to post the remainder of this interview to podcast. Simply go to americaoutloud.com/Terry Beatley, and you'll find the bonus footage right there. And hey, while you're at it, subscribe to my podcast channel on iTunes as well. You'll find all the links right there at America Out Loud. Thanks for tuning in to What If We've Been Wrong? We're shining light in dark places.